It's very good to be with you all this evening. When I told the sisters at lunchtime that I was going to be speaking about glory, they said, "What? In the middle of Lent? What better time?" Ash Wednesday. I don't know if you have this custom in the churches that you go to, but where I am, we, during the celebration of the Eucharist, we have what's called the imposition of ashes. And the ashes are formed from the palm crosses or palm leaves from the previous year. And as the priest makes the sign of the cross on each forehead, he says, "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Turn away from sin and be faithful to Christ. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes." Richard Holloway, one time Bishop of Edinburgh and a good friend, talks of dust that dreams. And I thought that was a wonderful phrase, dust that dreams. Michael Main, formerly the Dean of Westminster, and again a very good friend, has written a book, which I've just discovered. And it's called Dust That Dreams of Glory. Dust That Dreams of Glory. And of course, he is talking about us as dust, but that we dream of glory. It was put together posthumously from addresses he'd given previously and letters and so on, and it's reflections on Lent and Holy Week. Dust that dreams of glory. Many years ago, when I was a novice in the 1960s, I was asked or told to go and work in our chapel. In those days, our convent was at London Coney, just outside St. Albans, and it had been built to accommodate up to 300 sisters. We are now five, and we don't any longer live there. But it had a very beautiful chapel designed by Sir Ninian Comper. So I was put to work there to clean, to dust, to arrange flowers and so on, and it came to Ash Wednesday. There was a little old sister who worked with me, Sister Dorothy Hilda. She was very tiny and quite bent and always, always smiling. She said to me on Ash Wednesday, or the previous day, Shrove Tuesday probably, when we were just about to roll up the big pink carpet in front of the sanctuary, she said, "I love Lent. It's my favourite season of the year." And she meant it. What I didn't know at that stage was that every season was her favourite season of the year. She just gloried in life. She loved it. And she exuded the joy and the glory. When we think of Holy Week, the Last Supper, Jesus with his friends, including the one who would betray him, it's difficult then to see the glory. The Garden of Gethsemane. "If it is your will, let this cup be taken from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." The betrayal. Judas, who betrays him. Where is the glory there? Michel Quast describes Jesus carrying his cross. He says, "For a moment he staggered, then fell prostrate, God in the dust. The trial and the crucifixion, my God, why have you forsaken me? Where is the glory as he hangs on the cross dying? I sometimes wonder how his disciples and his friends, his mother, what was going through their minds as they watched these terrible events. Probably not anything to do with glory. Some might be angry. Why had he allowed this to happen? Some would feel desolate. Some just empty of feeling as they witnessed these events. And he died. No glory there. And they must have gone away and thought about what had happened in their various ways. Desolate. Where was the glory? And then, very early on Easter morning, the women went to the tomb and they found that the great stone had been rolled away. And there was someone dressed in white who said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here. He's risen." And then all those wonderful resurrection appearances, the time when they're gathered together in an upper room and the doors are locked, and suddenly Jesus is there standing in their midst. And he says, "Peace be with you." And they are amazed. This is the Lord they know, the Lord they love. They thought he was dead. Thomas wasn't with them. And he says, "Unless I can put my finger in the nails, in the hole that the nails have made, unless I can put my hand in his side, I shall not believe." And later they're together again in the upper room, and this time Thomas is with them. And Jesus comes and stands in their midst. And he says, "Peace be with you." And he turns to Thomas and he says, "Put your finger in the hole that the nails have made. Reach forth your hand and put it in my side. Doubt no longer, but believe." And Thomas says, "My Lord and my God." Or what about the two walking on the journey from Jerusalem to Emmaus? And they're sorrowful. They are lost without the Lord. And a stranger joins them, and he talks through the scriptures, but he asks them why they're sorrowful, and they say, "Are you the only person in this region who doesn't know the events of these last days?" And he talks through the scriptures, relating to himself, but they don't recognize him. And then it's evening, and they invite the stranger to come with them to the place where they're going to have supper and stay. And as they sit for supper, the stranger takes the bread and breaks it. And in the breaking of the bread, their eyes are opened and they recognize him. And as soon as they recognize him, he vanishes out of their sight. But they have seen the glory. What about the ones who are out in the fishing boat early in the morning? And they see a figure on the shore. And they recognize it's Jesus. And they come and they find that Jesus is, well, he's barbecuing fish for breakfast. This was not a ghost. This was the Lord in glory. God in the dust, God in glory. All that happened a long time ago, but I want to end by telling you stories of two people I have met recently. In their faces, I saw the glory of the Lord. Almost 5 years ago, false allegations were made against me that I had abused two adults. It wasn't taken any further. A lot of waiting, but then no trial, nothing like that, just dropped. Of course, after a while, it appeared in the local paper, and indeed in the national papers. And as I was walking home one evening on the day the local paper had told my story, out of the shadows in Cowley Road, a figure came. I knew him well. He was a small-time drug dealer, a bit dodgy, but all right, really. And he came and he just took my arm and he said, "Sister, don't you worry. We don't believe a word of it." And he just smiled and held my arm. There was the glory of the Lord. About 3 weeks ago, we had a wonderful occasion at the Porch, which is our daytime drop-in place for people who are homeless or vulnerably housed. We were having a big celebration because we had got the Queen's Award for voluntary service, and the Lord Lieutenant came in full regalia, and it was a celebration. When all the speeches had been done and the Lord Lieutenant had handed over the beautiful little glass emblem of the award, somebody came from the back of the room. Now, I know him slightly. I know his story. There was a time, not so many years ago, when he was in the accident and emergency department 3 or 4 times a week, every week, having made a serious attempt on his own life. Profound, profound depression. He got a lot better. He's a regular member of the Porch, and he pretty much keeps himself to himself, but not on this occasion. From somewhere, he had got himself a dinner jacket and a black tie, and he was quite the thing. And when the Lord Lieutenant had finished speaking and the director of the Porch had replied to the speech, Darren came forward, got onto the platform and spoke for 15 minutes. I have to admit, I couldn't understand a word of what he was saying because his diction is not very easy to understand and I'm a bit deaf. But his face was wonderful. It told a story. He'd rediscovered life. He'd found meaning in life. And he was grateful. That was, I think, what he was saying. One last story. Many years ago, in the early 80s, I had a letter from the number one governor of the top security prison in Evesham. He said, "Some of the men here have designed and sold a calendar for you to raise funds for Helen House. They've raised £4,500. Would you come and collect the check?" This was my first visit to a prison, and it was a top security one, quite a strange experience. But there were the men who had designed the calendar and sold it and raised the money. There was the Director General of Prison Service, and it was quite an occasion. Cups of tea and chocolate biscuits. Partway through the afternoon, a very tall, very thin man came over to me, and he said, "I don't want to cause you any offence, but I can see by looking at your face that you have found the kind of peace and joy in your life that I have found in mine." Quite strange coming from somebody in that situation. In the course of our conversation, I said, "If ever you're short of visitors, just send me a visiting order. 2 days later, there was a visiting order in my letterbox. I've now been visiting him for 35 years. He's done 44 years inside. But he said to me on that very first occasion, I knew when I came into prison that I was going to be here for a long time. I had to decide how to cope with that. He said, I knew if I kicked against the system, I'd be the one who got hurt. I thought back to my school days and I remembered the only thing I was good at was art. So I decided that would be the focus of my activity. For the first 5 years, he wasn't allowed a pencil. He was in solitary confinement for 10 years. Eventually, he was allowed art materials, and he designed some amazing things, not least a full colour calendar of wild animals, again for Helen and Douglas House. But on that very first occasion, I still remember those words that he said, I can see by looking at your face, you have found the same kind of joy and peace as I have found in mine. Sometimes when I look at his face, I can see the glory. Whatever heinous crime he committed, he has found something in his life which has given him peace and a quiet joy. If we look around, we can see glory. It is perhaps our calling to proclaim that glory, the glory of the only begotten Son of God. Dust that dreams of glory.